a new generation of medical students, of biomedical researchers, especially as more and more are researchers and students of color demanding change. In medical schools around the nation, there are organized students who are demanding to end race-based medicine, for example, demanding to change the medical curriculum. And so with these movements in communities among students, and as well with policy changes from scientific associations, I have hope we can make change. It's going to be difficult, but we have to uproot these underlying ideologies to do it.
Dorothy Roberts, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me and for bringing attention to this important issue.
Dorothy Roberts is professor of law and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania and the director of the Penn Program on Race, Science, and Society at UPenn's Center for Africana Studies. Listen to my complete conversation with Dorothy Roberts and read more about Henrietta Lacks at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Uranium mining is not the business it used to be. What with Fukushima and the shift to clean wind and solar, fewer reactors are being built and more are being decommissioned. What's a profit-hungry uranium mining company to do? Head to Niger in North Central Africa. There's lots of uranium there. It's the world's seventh largest producer. Icing on the cake, Nigerian environmental regulations are lax and weakly applied. Massive volumes of uranium have been dug up by French state-owned Orano outside the northern Nigerian town of Arlet. Now, a pair of Canadian companies have arrived. At another spot near Arlet, Toronto-based Global Atomic is digging down, aiming to market uranium to one of North America's largest utilities by 2025. British Columbia-based GoviX. BC-based GoviX has yet to begin exploiting one of the world's largest uranium deposits at Matawela, also near Arlet. Niger's mining-friendly, GoviX says. I spoke about the uranium mining industry, uranium mining in Niger, and these two Canadian companies with Gunter Vippel. Vippel is a veteran anti-nuclear campaigner in Germany and helps run a group called the Uranium Network. Hello, Gunter Vippel. Welcome to the Green Planet Monitor.
Hello, David Kettenberg. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I can. My name is Gunter Vippel, and I've been active in the anti-nuclear movement for many, many years. And right in the beginning, we found out that one of the main important things to nuclear power is uranium, the fuel that drives nuclear power plants. And I come from Germany, and we happen to have a tiny, small uranium mine in our backyard, so to speak, in the Black Forest, which very few people knew about. And of course, there came up a lot of opposition, and the mine was closed down in 1990. We realized that this mine had only produced about 1% of German uranium needs. So we wondered where the other 99% coming from, and soon found out that they came from Canada, United States, Africa, like Niger, Namibia, South Africa at the time, and also from Australia. So that's when we began to deal with or to look at what is happening in those countries. And we found out that in many cases, indigenous people were affected. And in many cases, there was also human rights violations, land rights issues, and other problems. And later on, there was always health problems. And for those who are probably not German and not so well acquainted with German geographics, before 1990, there was already still East Germany, the German Democratic Republic, as it was officially called. And there was huge uranium mining done by the Soviets in the end, basically by a German-named company, but state-owned, and so uranium mines there went to Russia and mainly to the nuclear weapons programs of Russia. And with the reunification between East and West Germany, this all fell into German responsibility to rehabilitate. And that has cost Germany about 6 to 7 billion euros until now, 30 years work, and it's not yet completely finished.
Let me ask you, Günther, because we're focusing on the situation in Niger, uranium mining in Niger, and the role of two Canadian mining firms in mining Nigerian uranium. Can you tell me quickly about these two Canadian companies that are mining uranium in Niger? And it's interesting, I mean, Canada is a much larger producer of uranium than Niger. Why would Canadian mining companies be mining uranium in Niger? Why can't they just get their uranium from Canada?
Good question. Now, Niger, there has been uranium mining in Niger since the 1970s. And the country as such is quite friendly to uranium mining. And so officials, the government and so on, they are not opposed to uranium mining. They welcome it because it's a source of income for a country which is one of the poorest countries on the planet and one of the last four or five countries in the Human Development Index all the time for 30 years now. Why do companies go to Niger? The French went there because it was their former colony. So it was very clear that they would try and find the resources they need in their former colonies. France also had kind of monopoly on uranium mining in Niger and other former colonies. Now, why did Canadian companies now come to Niger? Part of it is a little bit of guessing. But on one hand, there is uranium resources which are comparatively easy to find. And the companies are not mining yet. They are still exploring. There's two companies. One is named GOVX, and the other one is named Global Atomic. Both of the companies are not mining, actually. Only one of them has started a project near Arlit in the northern part of the country. And it began digging a tunnel to the underground deposit in November 2022.
Which company is this?
This is Global Atomic.
Global Atomic.
Yes, Global Atomic is that company. And they started digging by November 22. And they hope to produce the first uranium by the first quarter of 25. So it's a long time it takes because they have to do all the installations for extracting the uranium from the ore, which is not so easy. And there needs also to be a power plant and the transportation issue. All these kinds of things need to be done first before they can really produce uranium. And it's also quite underground. I don't know exactly how many meters, like 50 to 100 meters underground or even more. And so they need a system of tunnels to get the ore out.
And the second company?
The second company is GOVX, which is also since a long time present in Niger with exploration. And they have a project named Maduela. They do have a license for it. Deposit is not so big. And their production costs seem to be much higher than those of Global Atomic. And so they have not gone forward really with the project. It's all being developed, feasibility studies are done and so on, but there's no real digging and actual preparation for a mine, not yet.
So Global Atomic is the one that's really now engaged in developing that uranium mine in Niger near Arlet.
So it is. And if you ask me about why do Canadian companies go to Niger, just one little thing. When I looked up exploration regulations for Canadian companies, just quickly on the internet, you find at least a 5 to 10 page paper that tells you how to do it, what to do it, what to do, what not to do, when you have to call in authorities and all kinds of regulations. It was just a very superficial, simple document, but it's already, I don't know, 5 or 7 pages. If you go to Niger, no regulations. And if there should be any regulations, they stay just in the ministry, and they are not really enforced on the countryside. There's no independent, how do you say that in English?
Environmental assessment?
There is an environmental assessment, but whether the Niger ministries have the qualification to really evaluate such an environmental assessment paper is not so sure. I don't want to say anything against the Niger government, but those things are very complicated to evaluate. It needs real experts. And we know from another example in Tanzania, just the existence of an environmental impact assessment was good enough to give a license. Nobody really was ever reading this paper, much less evaluating it. And we know that some of those papers are not worth the papers they are printed on. Like in Namibia, there was an environmental impact assessment, and the Namibian people gave it to Germans, who gave it to an ecological independent institute here in Germany to assess it. And they said, there's lots of faults in it. It's literally not worth the paper that it's printed on. So you can get away with environmental impact assessments, which are not very valuable. And the ministry in Niger or other African countries are not necessarily able to really evaluate it. And that makes it, of course, more interesting for the companies to go there. And I don't know whether there's any clarifications about rehabilitation of the mine after the mining period. We know that it's a major problem with the existing mine, or mines actually by Areva, or now called Orano, in Niger. And there's huge piles of tailings which are radioactive and toxic, and there's now a big struggle about how to rehabilitate that. And of course, this issue is not resolved with the new mines.
So Global Atomic, based in Toronto, is now digging its uranium mine in just near Arlet. What are the environmental impacts of digging a uranium mine? I mean, there's obviously a lot of dirt and rock and soil coming up, and I would imagine a lot of that dirt and soil and rock and sand contains uranium, and it's all being laid out on the landscape surrounding the mine shaft. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, sure. The percentage of uranium in the rock or in the ore is in those circumstances normally far under 1%. In some situations it's like 0.5%, and mostly it's even less than that. It's 0.0 something percent. So that means you have a 1,000-fold mass of rock to mine to get 1 kilogram of uranium. And this is, first of all, the rock is crushed to send like consistence, and then sulfur acid normally and other chemicals are applied to it to extract the uranium chemically from the sand, basically. And after that, 99.5 or 99.8% of the mass of sand are waste, and only a very tiny part of it is uranium, or as they call it, yellow cake, because it has a yellow color most of the time, which is then packed and which is then transported to other countries to continue its in the nuclear fuel chain. And what is mostly forgotten is that the tailings that are left over there still contain the major part of radioactivity, and it was originally in the ore, because the uranium itself has not that much radioactivity. The other elements, the decay products which are in the sand or in the leftovers, have a much more radioactivity, and sometimes some parts of it have a very long half-life in the hundreds and thousands of years.
So Global Atomic is now digging their mine. They've not yet started to extract uranium ore. They're just digging the mine.
They're just digging, yeah.
What impact does this have on the surrounding environment?
Well, the impact of bringing down a tunnel isn't all that big. They dig basically a big hole. They do a ramp, not a shaft, not a vertical shaft, but they do a inclining ramp. So you have rock and sand that's blown up and with explosives and trucked out, and there's a lot of dust involved and so on, but it's not that dangerous. That's kind of, yeah, if you like digging a tunnel somewhere in a mountain. Of course, it's a difficult environment because it's right in the desert. There's a lot of wind that blows any kind of dirt into the area. And currently, the environmental impact is small, I would say.
And are there people living in the vicinity of this uranium mine that Global Atomic is digging?
No, actually, there's no villages or anything really close by. But the workers are normally housed in some housings near the mining site, because it would be too difficult to commute every day there. There's no public transport or anything available.
And these are Nigerian workers?
For the moment, I think the truck drivers and stuff will be Nigerian people, because there's a city of Alit comparatively close by, and one of the mines there has closed down lately in 2021. And so people are looking for jobs, and there will be people who can drive trucks and all that kind of things.
And working conditions? How well are these workers paid, as best as you know, and what are their working conditions?
Well, the payment, I don't know, but definitely a worker in Niger does not earn the same money as a worker in Germany or in Canada would earn, that's for sure. It's a quarter of the costs of a worker here, and the safety conditions have improved since there has been lots of protests at the existing mines. So the companies are a little more careful in doing proper or better working conditions, and some protection for breathing and so on.
Is it economically profitable in this day and age to be digging up uranium? The nuclear power, civilian nuclear power industry is kind of not what it used to be. So what's in it for a company like Global Atomic to be digging uranium, mining uranium in Niger?
That's a good question. That's what we are wondering about. With the Fukushima accident and the shutting down of nearly all of the Japanese nuclear power plants, until now only 7 of them are running again, and the shutting down of the German nuclear power plants over a period of years, something like 14% of the nuclear capacity of the world has been shut down. Approximately. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more, just as a guess. That had had a pretty bad impact on the uranium industry. And that means that the market for uranium broke down partially, because 10 or 14% less requirements of uranium means there's too much uranium on the market. Of course, the uranium industry tries to say differently, but the price of uranium fell after Fukushima, and it fell up down to $20 per pound, approximately, in 2017. And by 2017, the big uranium companies, and there's only a few big ones that produce the 70 to 80% of the world uranium production. That's Cameco from Canada, that's Kazatomprom from Kazakhstan, and that's Orano from Areva, or now Orano from France. And those three companies cut their production in 2017, Kazatomprom by 20%, Areva by something like 10 or 15%, and Cameco closed down one of its mines in northern Canada, in northern Saskatchewan. It's not exactly clear what effect it has or how much uranium they mine, but altogether, the world uranium production went down. And it took a couple of years, and if you look at the price after 2017, the uranium price increased. And now the uranium industry was using that as an indicator and was hyping uranium very much, saying, oh, the price of uranium is going up. And then they also like to repeat the rhetoric about the renaissance of nuclear power, which is complete nonsense, because there's not more nuclear power plants built in a 10 or 15 year average than is withdrawn, which is taken off the grid. There's a tiny little percentage more compared to those that are withdrawn. But in the end, the number of nuclear power plants is nearly not increasing, very, very slightly only. So the uranium requirements are not really increasing either. And the increase of price is the effect of the artificial decrease of the production of the three big uranium companies. And that made uranium look like it's scarce, then made the price go up. And that's also the moment where the junior mining companies, the exploration companies like OVX or Global Atomic, and there's many more, make investors believe that they have now a chance to get into the market. And whether they will get that chance and whether they can get into the uranium market, we don't know. A friend of ours, he always says, I don't have a crystal ball. We don't know. But it's very probable that the big companies like Cameco, Areva, Kazatomprom, they don't want to give away their shares. They can ramp up their production very quickly and at comparatively low costs, because their installations are already there and ready to go. Whereas the companies like Global Atomics and others, they have to build everything from scratch. And that costs a lot of money, a lot of investment. And currently, the uranium price is going up. People invest, at least some people do. But from the past, we also have seen in 2007, the price of uranium went up to a crazy $140 per pound. And then it fell down as quickly as it went up. So we can't forecast with certainty what the future will bring, but the physical requirements for uranium are not really increasing.
So it seems that uranium mining in Niger on the part of a company like Global Atomic is completely speculative. There must be a certain margin of profit associated with it, but not a whole lot.
Most definitely, it's highly speculative. That's very clear. And we know from the uranium boom in 2007 there was about 200 to 300 exploration companies, sometimes very small companies, that flocked into Africa. And of those 200 companies or even more, just one got successful, an Australian company, and they were able to locate a deposit in a World Heritage Site named the Lou Game Reserve in Tanzania. And it was a very good, or seems to be a very big deposit. And they were able to sell it to Russian Rosatom at an enormous price. So the investors who had invested there got twice to three times the money from they had invested a few years before. So that's a nice turnover if you get double or even three times the money you invested a few years before. But the other ones, you never heard of them again.
So if I were an activist investor, imagine me, an activist investor in this mining company, Global Atomic in Toronto, and I'm aware of their activities digging a uranium mine in Niger. On what basis would I say, I don't think this is a good activity to be engaged in?
Well, it's a high-risk activity. And if you find the one company that will be successful out of the 200, fine. But with the other ones, you will just simply lose your money.
So Global Atomic is now digging their mine near Arlet, and the mine shaft is scheduled to be completed by 2025, and then mining will begin. One would imagine that Global Atomic's uranium mine, is going to generate the same kinds of deleterious health effects for workers there as French Arena's uranium mine generated.
Well, it's very probable, I would say. Maybe precautions are a little bit better today and people are more aware, and the people who have worked in the mines are more aware of the dangers. So the risk can be probably reduced a bit, but in the long run, the risk doesn't go away. I mean, there's no possibility to protect miners 100% from radioactivity. That cannot be done. And with the not-so-strict regulations, and especially with the not-so-strict enforcement of regulations, of course there will be health impacts and risks for the people who work there and who live in the area. That's clear, yeah.
Gunter Wippel, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for asking.
Gunter Wippel is a veteran anti-nuclear campaigner in Germany and runs a group called the Uranium Network. Read more about Gunter's activities at greenplanetmonitor.net. It for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, please help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, the guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your brilliant instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, aka SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years? SFPERG is student activism, by students, for students, Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfpearl.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.